He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
And for this week's show, I'm solo, so my co-host is down south dealing with technical issues on things that he does outside being on this show with me. It's automotive-related, but not for discussion. We talked on a recent show about the gas price situation in the state of Connecticut. It doesn't sort of spill over into New York State and or Massachusetts because the state of Connecticut is in the process, and in the first, let's say, 5 months of 2023, of recovering a 25-cent holiday from state taxes on gasoline, which was, I guess, was at 25 cents a gallon when they did it, so that they could allow the public to enjoy lower gas prices. And that is a mixed success in my viewpoint, because I certainly did not see all stations drop their prices 25 cents when the gas sales tax holiday went into effect, and I can't even remember when that was. And now that it's going back up, are gas prices going up 5 cents a gallon at all the stations across the state? My experience, since I do a lot of driving around part of the state, is that no, it is not consistently going up 5 cents a gallon. In some cases, some of the suppliers saw fit to increase the prices, the pre-tax increase prices, at their stations around our Northwest Broadcast Corner, which I related in another show, previous show to this. I'm continuing with that because I have watched gas prices roulette going on with one supplier, which I'm quite familiar with in the state of Connecticut, in the Northwest Corner, that is, because they own the majority of Shell and Mobil stations, and in some cases, Citgo stations, around the extreme Northwest Corner. And this distributor has been rotating low prices seen at one station in one town for maybe a week or two, or maybe more or less, and then raising the price at that state at that station that showed a low price for the stations using the same supply gasoline up at one state, and then I found at one station, and then I found the low price it was at that one station, migrated to a different town. This has nothing to do with the gas tax situation, but what's been going on is prior to the gas tax recapture program in Connecticut, which started in January, they had seen fit to raise some of their prices at the stations, at some of the stations that I saw prior to that gas tax recovery rate up by as much as 6 to 10 cents a gallon at some of the stations. And then when the tax rate started in January to go up the first 5 cents, some of those stations raised their prices by the 5 cent increase allowed by the state of Connecticut, and some stations didn't. And so there is no relevance, in my opinion, with respect to the topic of the state's recapture of their 25 cents a gallon, which is going to be done over 5 months in this year, because it's not being effectively monitored by the state, and nor is it being effectively implemented or with any rationality by some of the suppliers, the wholesale suppliers that distribute the gas to their pump stations. So that's my rant for this show. Over in New York, however, I saw something very interesting. I reported in an earlier show that Dover Plains had a gas price war going on at two next-door stations. One was a Cumberland Farm station, and one was just a Gulf station, and it was down at 315.9 in this show I reported on, and 317.9 at the Cumberland Farms next door. Recently, I saw both up at 339 and 337 a gallon. And then on the day that this show is being recorded, it had gone back down to 359. This was in Dover Plains, New York. And the Cumberland Farms, to keep competitive, had to keep theirs 2 cents higher. But it is approximately, what, 30 cents lower than the Cumberland Farms station in Amenia, New York, which is at 349. That's not quite the right differential, but that's the price. And both of those stations are owned by the same person who has the franchise in. So gas prices remain an enigma in my mind because you don't really know what's setting them at any given week, day, or month anywhere in the state of Connecticut, maybe anywhere in the state of New York.
Maybe anywhere in the country.
Maybe anywhere in the country.
My co-host
reported on his recent cross-country trip from west to the east coast of finding gasoline at $2.79 or $2.69. These are all for regular grade pricing. That's all we talk about. It's anybody to guess how much people are being gouged for premium gasoline, but they are being gouged, in my opinion, because it's sometimes over a dollar more than the regular grade. And I am old enough to know when it used to be just 10, 20, and 30 cents differentials between regular, medium grade, and super in most of the country stations a long time ago, and it seems to be no longer the rule of thumb.
Although, you know, that was sort of inserted. I'm old enough to remember when it became that way. I just don't remember exactly when, because it never used to be anything more than 10, and, you know, maybe 10,
right.
20. That's how it was.
No, well, it is no longer. So we don't talk about premium and mid-grade gasoline pricing because there's no relevance to it. No relation to it is related to the regular grade pricing. To move on just to a final note, this wholesale supplier that distributes their gasoline to the northwest corner stations, which includes Tarrington, because that's where they're located, is now at a very big deficit compared to one Cumberland Farm station in Tarrington. This is for the town of Tarrington. And the wholesale buying club, which is BJ's, which are both under $3 a gallon, whereas all of this supplier's gasoline is at $3.24.9 a gallon for the Shell and the mobile stations. And I reported in the earlier show that they had had differential sort of prices at different of the same brand stations throughout the town of Tarrington, so you really didn't know what you were going to hit. If you drove by a mobile station in one part of town and a mobile station in another part of town, as an example. So the major BJ's club, which is a discount gasoline club or buying club for other things too, and the Cumberland Farm Station right next door to it, or right across the street from it, are competing at very similar and very favorable prices for those who are traveling to Tarrington. That's the information on that for this show. Let's move on. I received my latest edition of Car and Driver, which is one of the many car magazine publications I get to glean information about what I want to talk about. And the Car and Driver issue for this year has what they claim are the 10 best cars, or they've listed what they claim or what they think to be the 10 best cars available to buy in 2023. I don't know how I'm going to list them, but what really is interesting is that there are only two cars, I think, in the list of 10 that are anywhere near what I would call the affordability index that I think we have at the moment for cars that they claim to be the 10 best cars. All the other 10 best cars are somewhere between the high 50s to over $100,000 in price. And a couple of the other lower-priced 10 best cars are only two doors. So really, this list is interesting from the standpoint of what they are. They're interesting to me, but they're not very interesting in the terms of affordability for the mainstream buying public. The only two that came out as being affordable, if the public who listens to this wants to think these prices are affordable, were two Honda models. They're two four-door. They're both four-door, so that makes them somewhat reasonable for usage. And the pricing for them were ranged from a base price in the 20s, mid-20s, to the higher-end models of each in the mid-40s. Everything else was well over $50,000 and up, except for two two-door coupes, a Subaru and a Toyota. But those prices range from the high 20s to the high 30s if you opted them out. So for car drivers, 10 best cars, don't go looking for them to buy unless you've got a lot of money in your pocket, because unless you're strictly a Honda fan, you're not going to find anything that's near affordable for 2023, as far as I'm concerned, in the car and driver list. I don't own any of the cars in this list, and nor do I think that I would think that they might necessarily be the best cars. And I'm not sure what constitute best cars at any rate, because I think both Jay and I on this show have said cars today are built better than they've ever been built. And this has been going on for probably the last 10 years. They last longer. They've got sophisticated engineering, even down in the lower-priced sedan versions of the major manufacturers' cars. And they are perfectly fun to drive unless you are an extreme driver and you're looking for some kind of performance level, which I would say 90% of us don't really care about. And one of the things that I don't really care about is the 0 to 60 performance areas, where they are now boasting for electric cars under 3 seconds from 0 to 60. No, it's nonsense to think about going from 0 to 60 in any car in under 3 seconds, because you can't. You're not really driving in traffic conditions in the major parts of our country where that kind of acceleration is allowable, because you either run over cars in front of you that can't do the same thing, or it's just plain foolish because you're using absurd amounts of gas for that brief show-off performance factor, or a lot of electricity if they're all electric cars. And the electric cars are the ones that are now boasting these very low 0 to 60 acceleration times in the articles in which they're described. One of the things that the electric cars do seem to have as a possible advantage, performance advantage in the actual driving situation, is apparently acceleration time, very quick acceleration capabilities in 30 to 50 miles an hour or 50 to 70 miles an hour speed changes, which would be used in extreme needs of quick passing when you had very limited passing distances on some of these roads, in which there are very limited passing areas available, and you were really aggressively driving and trying to just go faster than everybody else every time you had the chance to do so. Otherwise, the normal acceleration capabilities of, I would say, 90% of the cars is roughly adequate for just about everybody driving. Although, as a knowledgeable driver, you have to know what your individual car that you're driving can do and never try to make it do what it can't do, because it would get you into a possibly dangerous condition, because it would not be able to do what you needed it to do when you were trying to pass a car or two or more than one car in a line of cars, and you saw cars coming at you in a different direction from the other direction. That's sort of a safety thing, I guess, but it's just a comment of the absurdity of what's going on in these new electric car world, the absurd capability that they have, as well as the absurd capability of the super high-performance cars. Another high-performance vehicle, which I'll comment on because of an interesting detail, which I found the most fascinating part of the article, was the test of the 2022 Ram 1500 TRX 703 horsepower truck. Car and Driver had a 40,000 mile evaluation on this vehicle in this issue. And for those who like the Ram pickup trucks, you should go pick up the magazine, if you haven't done so yet. And they drove it for 40,000 miles, 702 or 3 horsepower. They averaged 11 miles per gallon over the whole 40,000-mile test. They had to use high-test gas, and I believe the cost of the gasoline over that period ranged about, it was $16,600-plus. Now, that's a lot of money to spend driving 40,000 miles in any vehicle. But while they love the truck at certain levels, this figure of $16,000-plus for 40,000 miles of driving just was amazing. As they commented in the article, it was the equivalent of, I forget what they said it was equivalent of, but it was ludicrous. That's my word, not theirs.
Okay.
So if anybody wants to buy these super high-performance vehicles with big fossil-fueled gasoline engines, or this is what you get. You get really ridiculously great performance. Great may be a questionable word, but you also get ridiculous expense costs in terms of driving these vehicles, because you get very good performance, fairly low miles per gallon effective range, and you pay a lot of money because you have to put premium gasoline in these vehicles in most cases. So those of you who like them and can afford them, congratulations. But the general public is not going to be going out and buying too many Ram 200X, 1500 TRXs, and or Ford Raptors, for that matter. They have a 700-horsepower version out for 2023, and I'm sure the performance factors are similar, if not worse or better than the Ram. Jill, do you have any questions about all this stuff?
Not particularly. I'm just curious what people actually encounter when they go out there. You know, it's all very well and good to talk about this, especially, you know, watching stuff on TV or reading stuff in magazines. And it's more like, well, what do you actually encounter when you go out there?
Well, I don't know what you actually encounter when you go out there, but go back to the Ram for a minute. I recently was at a Chrysler Ram Jeep dealership getting a car serviced, and I was talking to sales staff there about the Ram TRXs, and he says people come in looking for them all the time. The dealers cannot stock any that aren't pre-sold. That means you have a bona fide order for one, with a deposit on it, and if they were able to get any, they would disappear within days, if not hours, of their arrival on a dealership lot. So despite my comment that it seems to be ridiculous to want to own one of these, even though they have very glowing performance figures, there are enough people out there buying these limited production vehicles. And they are limited production. I don't know whether they're limited because of engine shortage and production of these specially high performance engines or not. But there are a lot of Ford Raptors running around our broadcast corner, and a lot is relative to. They're not a lot in terms of Volkswagen, Subarus, and Fords, but they are a lot for the particular model range that we're talking about, which are pickup trucks. Dodge Rams in the Rams case versus the Dodge Ram 1500 TRX, and Ford 150s versus the Ford Raptor one, which is based on the Ford 150 model level. So be it.
Right. Okay. So we have a couple minutes left. I'm just curious, if you had to go out and buy a car right this second, I'm not talking about what you would do, like,
well,
given the weird price inflation that's going on, given everything.
There are affordable cars out there. If we're now discussing affordability being in the $35,000 to $50,000 price range,
which it isn't.
Well, it is. It isn't for certain people. That's right.
Right, and but, so these are
now. It's gone up $10,000 roughly, I think, in the last two broadcast years of this show. Jay and I used to be talking about the overall average cost of a vehicle in the United States was, of all the vehicles, was in the 30s. Now it seems to be in the 40s. The electric cars are in for going to be in for a shock, no pun intended. The cost of lithium batteries is skyrocketing, and they're going to only go up because the materials used to make lithium-ion batteries, which is cobalt and lithium, is apparently a commodity that's sort of, I don't know what it's like, gold or platinum.
No, it's more expensive.
It's certainly going to show up in the forms of the rise in the electric vehicle prices. Tesla's just getting ready to increase their prices. Ford has already done so with the Lightning pickup truck and the base model, and it's going to continue as more and more electric car demand, as the electric car demand rises.
Right, but that's the great, you know, that each industry or each aspect of each industry has its own dirty little secret.
That's right, and I think the cost of batteries is going to be the dirty little secret.
Well, the cost of the
cars, for sure.
The cost of the palladium, the cost of the lithium, the cost of those, the cost of the rare earth. Not to mention the fact that all comes right now. It's hogged by China. There's an official word for hogged. Sorry,
yeah.
That's not.
I just want to go to one final safety thing in the final seconds of this show, and that is check your tire tread depth, please. I cannot emphasize that enough in terms of grip safety or safety of grip on roads in less than perfect daily dry road conditions. If you have less than an eighth of an inch of tread depth, you do not effectively have much tread depth for tread contact patch with the road. Theoretically, you have a greater contact patch, but you have no ability to avoid aquaplaning and or skidding on turns because the tires will have very little grip contacting with very little tread depth. And that's my safety tip for the rest of this winter, as far as I'm concerned. We've been blessed by a light winter so far, but something's going to come, and if you don't have good tread in your tires, you are at risk of getting into an accident, for sure.
There's a tree out there that has your name on it.
Hopefully not a tree.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.